Connecticut Democrats, or Connecticrats, as they have never been called.
It's time for Connecticrats, the CT Dems podcast. I'm David Kostek.
And I'm Grace Carlos.
Well, since last time we joined you, a new person has joined the Democratic ticket, vice presidential candidate Tim Walz of Minnesota. Grace, what did you think when you heard that it was going to be him?
I had to do my research on him to figure out who he was when his name came around, because his name was circling around in different areas before it was announced. But after doing my research on him and seeing what he was all about, then him being announced as a candidate, I was super excited. I thought he was like a great candidate.
Yeah, he's a fantastic candidate. Yeah, you're right. Toward the end, there were a couple. And a little peek behind the curtain, I had made up a couple of different graphics with different VP names, so that whoever it was, I'd be ready to go when it was announced, and I just had to like double and triple check. But yeah, we got Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, on the ticket, and you and I are going to get a chance to see him next week out in Chicago.
I'm super excited for that. And I know some people, like, they didn't know how to feel at first, but I think he's really proven himself and shown that he is the best person for this seat.
I am genuinely surprised about the speed and the scope of the change in the polls and the change in outcome and just a general change in energy and activity. Has it surprised you, or does it sort of align with what you would have expected if someone had told you, if someone had a crystal ball and told you, look, Joe Biden's going to step aside and Kamala Harris will be the nominee? Would you have thought it goes by mid-August we'd be where we are?
No, I would not have thought that. I was definitely surprised as well. You know, in the beginning when it was announced and people were excited, I feel like that was expected. But now that we're kind of into it and to see like the momentum is still there and people are still pumped up and ready to go, I was surprised because I've never seen or experienced something like this before. But it also makes me very, very excited and just feel empowered.
I listened in to the Donald Trump, Elon Musk Twitter space the other night so that you, dear listener, don't have to. It was such an unmitigated disaster, and it seems that the Trump disasters are just piling up one right after the other. He seems incapable of pivoting and reacting to the reality that he's facing. Maybe he's never been that good at facing reality.
They've been a hot mess over there ever since then. I feel like he's all over the place, and it's like they literally can't say the right thing to get support from their people. I've seen like there's Republicans against Trump groups starting up and things like that. So it seems like it's really going downhill for them.
During the Democratic convention, you know, the vice presidential nominee and the presidential nominee don't speak till late in the week. Did you see what they're planning for Tuesday night?
No, I didn't. What do they have planned?
Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, since they don't need to be in Chicago, are going to Milwaukee to the same venue where Donald Trump had his convention to demonstrate what enthusiasm and excitement looks like in the city of Milwaukee. So while we're down in Chicago doing convention things on Tuesday night, they're doing a rally in Milwaukee, which is only about 90 minutes up the road.
And I guarantee you it's going to be a crazy turnout, and it's going to be wild in a good way, just as all of their other rallies have been. So I'm very interested in seeing how that goes.
Going to be electric. I'm looking forward to the convention in a way that I just simply cannot explain. Not 100% sure I get to get in as a staffer, but we'll see what happens when we get there. One person who will definitely be there with us is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Connecticut, Susan Bisowitz. She is among the delegates going out there. And Tara Kamen sat down and talked with Susan about that and about the Harris-Walz ticket. Let's hear from Susan and Tara.
This week on Connecticrats, we're honored to have a very special guest with us, Lieutenant Governor of Connecticut, Susan Bisowitz. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be with you. We're about 3 months away from the election.
It's very exciting stuff. So I wanted to start with your personal journey. You've had a remarkable career in public service from your time as Secretary of State of Connecticut to now serving as Lieutenant Governor. What inspired you to get involved in politics, and what has motivated you to stay in public service for so many years?
Well, I love helping people. I love the job that I have as Lieutenant Governor. I really enjoy working with Governor Lamont And I loved being Secretary of the State for 3 terms. And before that, really enjoyed serving in the state House of Representatives. I'll say that my inspiration to go into public service had a lot to do with meeting Ella Grasso when I was in high school. I was in the American Legion Girl State program when I was just finishing my junior year in high school. And I remember going to the University of Connecticut, and she was coming to speak to about 200 high school girls who had come from virtually every part of the state. And she strode into Jorgensen Auditorium to speak with us. And what was interesting is all of a sudden there was this hush that fell over some very noisy high school students. And it was because all of these young women realized that the governor had just joined us, and to have the opportunity to hear her talk about what she did in government was very inspirational. She had been elected in 1974, the first female governor elected in her own right in the whole country. So she made history in our state. She made history across the country in November of 1974 when she became the first governor, female governor, to win without following her husband into office. There had been 2 other female governors. One was Lurleen Wallace in the 1960s, who served after her husband, George, because there were term limits. And George ran her in his stead and made no bones about the fact that he was really the governor, even though she was sitting in the office. The real work happened in his office down the hall. And also, there was, in the early 1900s, Ma Ferguson, who had been the wife of Pa Ferguson, who got indicted for selling pardons from the governor's office. So she took over in his stead. So Ella Grasso was a big deal because she did it all on her own. And for Connecticut Democrats, I'll just say that this year, 2024, is the 50th anniversary of Ella Grasso first being elected. And I'll also note that since Ella was elected in 1974, even though we are a very blue state, we have not yet had another female Democratic governor.
I'm so glad that you mentioned Ella Grasso, who, as you mentioned, also was the first female governor of Connecticut in 1974. It reminds me a lot of another trailblazing woman that's more present in modern times, Kamala Harris, who is the second woman to ever be on a major party's presidential nominee. I was just wondering, you were a child when Ella Grasso was elected, and reflecting on your experiences from then to now, how do you feel about witnessing and being a part of those historic moments for women in politics? And do you see similarities or differences in how those milestones resonate with you now compared to when you were younger?
You know, I will say that it was a big deal at the time when Ella Grasso was elected. So she made the cover of every major national news magazine. She was on the cover of Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report and The Economist, even other publications across the globe. Noted this as a milestone just because there were very few women who were leaders of countries. And, you know, Connecticut at the time had somewhere between 2 and 3 million people. So it was a milestone. I also remember being in high school in 1978 when she Alegrasso led our state through a very debilitating snowstorm. It was a storm that started off as very heavy snow, and then there was ice on top of that. And it literally stopped the state in its tracks. She had to close down all the highways because they were impassable. People got stuck on the highways and had to abandon their cars. It was literally, highways were closed for days. And it was, I remember it too, as a high school student, having a whole week off for snow days. That hadn't ever happened. And so people in our state remember her very hands-on leadership. So fast forward to today, I will say that a lot of people in our country, particularly Democratic women, were extremely disappointed that Hillary Clinton lost the presidential election in 2016. Everyone thought, here is a remarkably well-qualified woman who would be poised to do the job, someone who had been First Lady, United States Senator, Secretary of State. She would have been highly qualified. Unfortunately, she lost. And a lot of women took that moment to get energized and to run for office themselves. I can't tell you how many women who are now on the town council, in the legislature, even in constitutional office, got motivated by Hillary Clinton's loss in 2016. And here we are today, 8 years later, having now a uniquely qualified and probably one of the most qualified people to run for president of the United States in Kamala Harris. And I say that with due respect to all of her predecessors, but take Barack Obama as an example, who was a two-term president. He had been a state senator and then ran for the United States Senate and hadn't served very long before he became president. And here we have Kamala Harris, who was the district attorney of a very large city, San Francisco, California. She served as attorney general for the most populous state in the country, California. She served in the United States Senate representing California, and she's now been, for the past 3.5 years, vice president, serving alongside President Biden during this historic presidency, where she was a key part of passing a huge infrastructure bill, helping the country recover from the pandemic, helping to restart the economy and creating millions of jobs, seeing the nomination of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the United States Supreme Court, the first Black female to be appointed to the Supreme Court. So a lot of historic things have happened with her help. And so between her record of accomplishment in public service and what she's done as vice president, I think she is uniquely qualified and ready to go on day one to be president of the United States. And it would be historic because she would be the first woman and the first person, woman of color, also to be elected. So it's very exciting. It's been thrilling to see all kinds of people show their enthusiastic support And we've seen that support in hundreds of millions of dollars raised just in a day or two. Thousands of volunteers come forward. Johanna Hayes and I, along with Rosa DeLauro and Stephanie Thomas, hosted a Women for Harris call in Connecticut, and we had 2,100 people on it. It was just, that just shows you the level of enthusiasm for our first and female president and our next United States president.
You've been a strong advocate for women's rights and equality throughout your career. And thinking about what's on the ballot and what's at stake this year with this presidential election, specifically healthcare broadly, but also more specifically women's healthcare, Connecticut has made strides in expanding healthcare, but there's always more work to be done. What are your priorities when it comes to healthcare and specifically women's healthcare, and how do you see us moving forward as a state?
So, first I'll say about Kamala Harris that women's rights, especially women's reproductive rights, are on the ballot in November because of the United States Supreme Court's reversal of Roe, something that former President Trump has taken credit for. Kamala Harris has said that she will make it a priority to ensure that abortion and reproductive freedoms are available in every state in the country. And I also think she is the right person to be running for president because in addition to women's and reproductive rights being on the ballot, LGBTQ plus rights, voting rights, and civil rights are also on the ballot. And there's not been a more fierce advocate for all of those issues than Vice President Harris. She's been, throughout her career, a stalwart supporter of all of those rights and freedoms. And here in Connecticut, we have been leading on reproductive rights since the Griswold versus Connecticut decision that gave women the right, married women, the right to married couples to use contraception. That happened in 1961, and that decision provided the underpinning for Roe versus Wade that stood from 1973 until it was reversed 2 summers ago. And Connecticut has had a Roe versus Wade statute enshrined into state law since the early 90s. And since then, our legislature, under our administration's leadership, has passed the Reproductive Freedom Act, which gives women the ability to access reproductive health care in our state, even if they come from other states where that care is illegal. Because right now, a third of women, I believe the number is 28 million women right now, live in states and are of reproductive age where the right to an abortion is severely restricted, if not altogether banned. So there are, I think, some things that Connecticut is doing. Another thing that we've done to lead, in addition to the passage of the Reproductive Freedom Act, which also included the ability of medical providers to give women care, whether they come from Connecticut or outside of Connecticut, not have to worry about criminal prosecution. So that's another important aspect of that legislation. Further, we passed a bill to allow pharmacists to prescribe contraception and also abortion medication. And that is a huge step forward. More than 20 states were already doing it. We wanted to join because many parts of our state, Eastern Connecticut, Northeastern Connecticut, Northwestern Connecticut, have healthcare deserts. But everybody lives usually within 5 miles of a pharmacy, if not closer. And so pharmacists can greatly increase access to care because women who may need those prescriptions don't have to wait to make an appointment, pay to see a doctor, have to get transportation or wait weeks. The pharmacist can provide that care. So we are leading in so many ways. And I think that our state has shown the federal government what we can do, whether it's in the area of women's reproductive rights, whether it's in the area of gun safety. President Biden was here. Two summers ago, attend a gun safety summit hosted by Chris Murphy, and using Connecticut's law as a potential federal model. So we're leading in so many ways, but there is a lot more to do.
Women's healthcare is an issue that's really important for young people, but another, I guess, you could arguably even say even larger issue for young people in this state is being able to secure jobs, and not just any jobs, jobs that sustain their lives, that they're able to pay their rent and get the basic living things done. So I was kind of wondering, I know that creating jobs is somewhat of a passion of yours. So what specific initiatives is your administration pursuing to attract new businesses to Connecticut and create those sustainable, high-paying jobs that keeps young people within the state?
So, first of all, I'll say that our flagship state university, UConn, has a record of having 78% of its graduates stay in Connecticut. And many other universities, like University of Hartford, have more than half of their graduates remaining in the state of Connecticut. Also, our community colleges and our state colleges and universities are places where our young people go to get education and training and then stay. The administration has provided historic support to UConn, to our state colleges and universities, and also to our community colleges, where many young people can attend for free. So to have that training right here and that education available right here in our state, I think, ensures that we'll continue to keep the lion's share of our young people here. We have 90,000 jobs that are listed as open right now. Many of those are in state government, financial services, healthcare, manufacturing. There are so many exciting opportunities for young people. And we are working through our governor's workforce board to make sure that our largest employers have the young people that they need and the trained people that they need to do the work and jobs that are open in those companies. So here's an example of a great partnership that we've had. The governor brought Infosys, which is a global IT company, to Hartford. And one of the reasons that Infosys wanted to come to Hartford is because of the smart young people that we have here. And they created, Infosys created a six-week training program for college students to take, recent grads to take. They would be paid for the 6 weeks of training so they could be trained in IT-related computer programming and other kinds of related activities that Infosys needs. And they've been hiring hundreds of young people for great paying jobs. So, you know, that's just one example of many things that we're doing to keep young people here. But I think when young people think about where they want to live or where they, whether they want to stay or where they want to move, they're going to look at what record does a state have on reproductive rights. We are one of the most highly rated states for women and families because we have a paid leave program, right? We have a $15 an hour plus a minimum wage. We also are nationally recognized as a state that is welcoming to the LGBTQ plus community. So we're a state that embraces diversity and that supports women and families. And I think that's why young people would like to come here, stay here, and live here. And also, we've been very supportive of transit-oriented development policy so that young people can live in a place like New Haven, where New Haven's on track to build more than 2,000 new apartments this year. And you can live in one of the many apartments in either New Haven or Norwalk that's within about a quarter of a mile from the train station. You don't have to own a car. You could get on the train, go to work, or work from home. And I think a lot of young people, my kids included, don't want to have a car, right? They want to use public transportation or walk if they can. And so to have so many communities like Norwalk, Stamford, New Haven, and Milford that are attracting young people by the hundreds, if not thousands, because young people have the opportunity to live very close to a train station and commute to work without a car.
Having the option to not have a car and also be able to commute using public transit is much more green, I would say, than having your own, to drive everywhere and all that kind of stuff, which reminds me of the environment and how that's a critical issue this election as well, especially with the climate crisis intensifying. Connecticut has been a leader in clean energy and environmental protection. So what are your thoughts on our state's role in combating climate change and policies that you're advocating for to ensure a more sustainable future?
Well, I think that we have been doing a lot. One example is in terms of creating wind energy, and those turbines are now up and are being placed off the coast of New London. Those are being built as we speak and should be up and running in the next year or two. And they will, once those are up and running, combined with our nuclear plants at Millstone, 93% of our energy will be carbon free. I would like to see our state continue to do more in terms of solar clean energy, because I think there are states like Massachusetts that have really doubled down on that. I'd love to see us do more. Europe, many European countries have embraced that. And I'd like to see us expand our wind energy, because we have a whole coastline, and we had there was some interest in putting a wind project in Bridgeport. That has not happened, but perhaps that's a place for us to go.
As we sort of look to the future for you, but also the Democratic Party as a whole, who's seen a lot of changes and a growing focus on progressive policies and grassroots movements, what can the people of Connecticut expect from your office as you continue to serve in the next few years?
So the governor and I continue to be very committed to keeping our state on a fiscally sound path. We have passed six with bipartisan support, six balanced budgets without raising taxes. In fact, we have had two historic tax cuts. And those tax cuts included the biggest personal income tax cut. And people saw this, 1.1 million taxpayers saw this when they filled out their personal income tax return this year. And so we've also been able to pay down almost $8 billion of debt, which is important because by doing that, we have saved, I believe, more than $700 million in debt payment each year, which we can now use to support education, early childhood education, higher education, public education, K through 12, job training, healthcare, and so much more. So by paying down debt, we are able to invest more in our families. And we've been doing that. We've made our administration, because of that debt pay down, have been able to make historic investments in early childhood education that supported a lot of women in businesses, in K through 12 education, in free community college and higher education and job training. So we'd like to continue to invest, because when you invest in education, you're investing in the future, and we're investing in our families and the success of our state.
Well, believe it or not, there were elections just this past Tuesday here in Connecticut. We have our August primaries. This happens every 2 years, where the candidates for statewide office or district office stand for primary. There weren't a ton of primaries on the Democratic side. There were, I would say, about two or three state Senate seat races that went to primary, and maybe about six or eight House seats that went to primary. On the Republican side, they had statewide for U.S. Senate to decide who's going to lose to Chris Murphy, and a regional in Connecticut's 4th congressional district to see which person will run against Jim Himes. What did you think when you looked at any of the results that we got out of the primaries this week?
Honestly, for our side, I wasn't really surprised. We see some returning people, as well as some endorsed people. Definitely people that we predicted to win. Something that seriously stood out to me when looking at the results was the voter turnout on the Republican side. Not seriously surprising in a bad way, but just very interesting at how low the turnout was compared to us.
I'll be less generous. It was staggeringly low. I was blown away by that. Look, they've had their share of Senate primaries. You know, Lior Levy prevailed over Themis last time. And, you know, they had a primary in 2018 with two lesser known figures. And then back before that, you had members of former members of Congress running in primaries. They used to get around 100,000 voters, 130, I think it topped out at. Even in 2018, when there were very few people with name recognition running for U.S. Senate, it was very high turnout. And now this time, something like 7% turnout. 93% of Republicans in Connecticut couldn't be bothered to show up.
Honestly, when I'm thinking about it, just seeing how everything with the Trump campaign is going downhill and Republicans are kind of all over the place, do you think that affected the voter turnout for the primaries, since they don't really have any enthusiasm and some people are even questioning if they are a Republican or want to remain with that party? Do you think that had an effect on our turnout here in Connecticut?
For our primary, hard to know because, again, there's not a member of Congress or a statewide race on the ballot. So it's really hard to get a gauge of the Democratic enthusiasm. You can see it in special elections that have taken place both around the state and throughout the country, that there is definitely a more engaged Democratic base. There were recently special elections in Washington state, and the numbers were absolutely staggering. All of these are very good signs.
Yeah, this has gotten me really excited, and it was very exciting to see just the involvement of everybody for the primaries, just preparing themselves, supporting who they were supporting, as well as seeing the momentum and excitement happening for the upcoming election. A couple weeks ago, I was able to join the Connecticut Women for Harris call, where all the women in Connecticut, a bunch of different women, just came together to express their support and just learn about ways they can support. It was really cool, and it was a really fun opportunity. And I was even able to invite some women that I know from here in Connecticut that really haven't involved themselves when it comes to politics and voting, and they were very enthusiastic to join and learned a lot. So it's just really cool to see people getting involved locally, statewide, and just really excited for the upcoming election in November.
We have a number of events around the state next week with phone banks going on at least five or six cities. Various candidates running for state office and for Congress have events going on as well that you can join. Do check out mobilize.us/CTDems to find out about all of those. You can certainly join. We had some last week as well, and I was down at the Norwalk phone bank, and I think at least four, maybe five people who came to the phone bank were literal first-time ever volunteers. Not just first time in this campaign cycle. I mean, they had never taken that step of signing up and coming to an event. And yet, there they were. Two of them were college age, a couple others were more middle-aged, and it was fantastic to see.
It is fantastic, and I'm seeing the same thing out here in southeastern Connecticut. A lot of first-timers, not just young people, not just people my age, people of all ages, people coming with their parents, people coming as families, and they're wanting to learn and support and get involved in their area, not just nationally, but even locally, coming out, wanting to join their DTCs. So seeing this is really just making me super excited.
Well, there's a lot to be excited about. Again, we'll be going off to the convention next week, so we'll report back to you from there in a little while. It's weird to be a Democrat and to be optimistic, and yet here we are.
Yes, I love this for us.
All right. We'll catch you next time on Connecticrats, the CT Dems podcast. Volunteer for something. Sign up for something. Get out there. Pound the pavement. Help our state legislative candidates do their thing. Help our members of Congress win yet again. And help Kamala and Tim take 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.